January 21st, 2014. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola, coming to you from the Chicago suburbs, where it is very, very windy today. I really appreciate you joining me today on RBN. Their website is republicbroadcasting.org. To see the guest lineup and relevant links for this program, please visit spingola.com, and also please visit spingolaspeaks.info or spingolaspeaks.wordpress.com. Now, I did not create this one site. Actually, if you go to spingolaspeaks.info, it will take you to spingolaspeaks.wordpress.com. And I did not create this site, but one of our listeners did. And I really appreciate that he did this. And he has links, and he works very hard on this. So I hope that you will visit this website. During the program, email your questions or comments to comment@spingola.com. You may join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by visiting spingola.chatango.com. We will take calls in the second hour after we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. Our guest today is Dr. Walter M. Brash. He is the author of numerous books. One of his books is called Before the First Snow, Stories from the Revolution. And he also wrote Fracking in Pennsylvania, Flirting with Disaster. His websites are Walter Brash, and that's spelled B-R-A-S-C-H, walterbrash.com, and walterbrash.blogspot.com. Dr. Brash, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
It's wonderful to have you back on again. It's kind of an awful subject that we talk about, and the things that we hear about fracking in the mainstream media are totally different than what you tell us. And, of course, we believe what you tell us because, well, it just makes sense.
Well, I thought everybody believed the mainstream media. They're always accurate.
Well, there are things that they do tell us that are true and things that they want to cover up. And obviously, they are in a big cover-up thing with the corporations because, well, look who funds them. Corporations, the advertising, so you have to look at who's advertising.
Yes, you do.
Yes.
And that's one of the problems with the entire fracking industry is that the oil and gas lobby is so powerful and has so much money that they've been spreading it among all of our politicians, Democrats and Republicans. And, of course, when you get campaign funds, you don't say, well, let's see who's the best option here for my constituents, what benefits my voters the best. You say, oh, I need some more money. So you do whatever the industry tells you is basically my thinking.
Sure. And certainly, given the things that have happened to the constituents, the people, the citizenship, the citizens in Pennsylvania and elsewhere, oh my goodness, these people are really suffering, and will continue to do so. And there's so many things that occur because of fracking.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, our current governor has taken almost $3 million from the industry during his campaigns. And we've got a huge amount of money that's been spent on our legislature to create a law in Pennsylvania that basically was written by the industry and favors the industry, although you won't hear the industry ever tell you that, but it's like 192 pages. And just one page after another, you know, that looks like regulations, but it truly isn't. And so what we have in Pennsylvania now is almost 14,000 wells, horizontal fracking wells, and everybody says, well, it's great for the economy, which it isn't, and we could talk about that during the next hour, during this hour, but it's also dangerous to the health and to the environment.
Of course, and of course, corporations are notorious for not really being concerned about the environment. They're more concerned with profits and profit shares and giving back to their shareholders. And the environment is the least of their concerns. And I think you can see that in other countries, much more than you can see it here, even.
Oh, definitely. I think we're not that into environment here for a corporation. It's basically bottom line mentality. Like, what can I do to squeeze out another dime for my investors? Now, I do believe in capitalism, but I also believe there's a responsible capitalism where you do not basically screw over the people in order to get the money. And I think that's what we're seeing in the oil and gas industry, which is the largest profit-making industry ever in the world. And I think this is part of the problem, is that with all those profits, you'd think that they would be a little bit more careful with safety issues with workers, or maybe with the environment, or maybe with developing technology that's a little safer, or maybe even donating back to our communities with all those profits. Certainly there's enough to share, and the U.S. is also subsidizing the oil industry $4 billion a year.
What?
Oh, yeah. The U.S. government, that means us taxpayers like you and me, $4 billion a year subsidy to the oil industry.
Wow. They didn't ask me about that.
I don't remember getting a questionnaire from the White House asking if I'd be interested in donating to the oil industry. I might have overlooked it.
Well, you probably threw it out with your junk mail, right?
I might have, yes, uh-huh.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you have a new book.
Yeah, it's called Fracking Pennsylvania. It's just going into the second edition now. It's approximately 470 pages, plus some photographs. And it's pretty much the entire story of fracking, not just necessarily Pennsylvania, but I focus on Pennsylvania because I live there. That's the center of the Marcellus Shale, which is the most active in the country at the moment, because all the issues are coming out of Pennsylvania. But it also talks an awful lot about fracking throughout the entire country and what the issues are throughout the country, and even in Illinois, which has a shale in the southern part of the state. So basically, it looks at the entire aspect of fracking and what its impact is upon the people.
Well, and what has the reception been for this book? If it's in the second edition,
yes,
that says quite a lot, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. My publisher is excited. She's really thrilled, and I'm thrilled, too, because, you know, we get 10% of the list price of the book. So every time a book sells, I get 10% of it. So
super.
Yeah, and I've been able to eat better than McDonald's burgers lately.
Well, you shouldn't be eating McDonald's burgers.
Yeah, my doctor said the same thing.
You need to listen. Oh my goodness. Well, I haven't seen you on Fox News talking about this. What's the deal there?
They never talked to me. They never called. In fact, none of the networks called. The marketing director at Greeley and Stone, which is my publisher, has made contact to all the the major outlets, and for some strange reason, I guess I didn't become a celebrity and get drunk driving in Florida or something, so they didn't need me.
Oh goodness, this is very telling, don't you think?
I thought so. In fact, we've had some editors who have said it doesn't impact us because there's no whales in our territory. So I thought, okay.
Sure. Oh, my goodness. All righty. Doctor, we are going to a quick 3-minute break. We will be right back after word from our sponsors. Today is Dr. Walter M. Brash, and he is the author of numerous books, But the one we're talking about today is fracking in Pennsylvania, flirting with disaster. To help out some of the people, the listeners who may not know exactly what fracking is, could you just tell us what they do, what it is, and how it affects the earth?
Yeah, I think I can do that in less than 4 or 5 hours, but I'll try to do it in a couple minutes. Basically, what the oil companies do and the gas companies is they drill down into the earth as much as a mile and a half deep into the shale. Then they have what's called a lateral borehole. That's another pipe that goes at a 90-degree angle for as much as another mile to get the gas. Now, the industry will tell you that we've had fracking since the late 40s and it's been safe. Well, technically they're correct. It is safe if they use vertical fracking. And that's going straight down into the earth without that turn to go another mile or so. And it also requires less water and less chemicals. But the horizontal fracking that is, you know, making the problem is less than 10 years old. And what happens is, in order to get down into the earth, what they have to do is use anywhere from 3 to 9 million gallons of water, and that's depending upon the geology of where they are and some other factors of the geology. Plus, they use about 100,000 gallons of chemicals. Now, there's about 1,000 different chemicals they can use. They don't use all of them. It depends on where they are and how deep they want to go and so forth. But the chemicals, of the 1,000, about 3/4 of those are carcinogens. Now, what they do, and then they also use maybe 10 tons of sand that comes out of the Midwest, Wisconsin, Minnesota. As a lubricant. So they put all this stuff down into the earth. And then they, like I said, they then turn the pipe 90 degrees and it picks up some more gas and comes up. Now the biggest problem, of course, is when you put that much stuff into the earth, something is going to happen. It fractures. I think my dog would like to explain this situation as well.
We often have dogs visit the program. It's because some of our guests have dogs, and sometimes they do want to talk about things. So,
and in fact, okay. My dogs are much brighter than the humans, so you know I usually let them talk. But anyhow, the situation is that after they put all the stuff into the earth, you got to bring it back up. Not all of it. They bring up a lot of stuff, but they also bring up stuff that they didn't put in the earth. Like, if you don't disturb it, there's no problem. But they disturbed, and they bring up radon, 226, and some other radioactive chemicals that are in the earth. So they bring that up. Then they have all this wastewater, which is not usable for anything. You can't even recycle it. And they put it in open-air pits. Now, the open-air pits are things that can leak or be exposed to the air or pollute the ground. And so to get rid of it, then they back up trucks to the pits, fill those trucks, and send them out to what we call injection wells that can go 2 miles deep into the earth. So now they're shoving all that stuff back down into the earth, and that's where we have earthquakes. The industry says there's absolutely no correlation between fracking and earthquakes, which is true if they didn't frack, but if you look at all kinds of data, there were like in Ohio, there were no earthquakes anywhere in most of Ohio until they started fracking. So you start to ask questions. And you have other issues and other problems that occur with this as well, including what we call methane migration. Methane is very, very flammable. It's not toxic. People say they can drink it, and I figure, okay, if you want to drink methane, that's fine with me. But it's flammable, so what happens is by disturbing the methane in the earth, it goes into wells, which is things that are very important to people that are not on city water. And in Pennsylvania, about 1/5 of all the people that of all the houses in Pennsylvania are on well water. So you got explosive chemicals in the well water.
Goodness.
And it then becomes undrinkable.
And I think you can also apply this to other states. You mentioned earthquakes in Ohio, and certainly, whoever heard of an earthquake in Ohio? We've all heard of the earthquakes in Japan. We've heard of the earthquakes in California and elsewhere. But in Ohio, and what about Oklahoma? And what about all these sinkholes that are all of a sudden, we hear about a sinkhole where, just recently, there was a sinkhole right beneath where they had a Corvette museum, and all these Corvettes, wasn't it Corvettes, that fell into the
mm-hmm.
sinkhole?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a great tragedy there.
It is.
You know, you're getting earthquakes in Texas and places that have never had earthquakes, and they've been clustered around the injection wells. You've had it in Oklahoma. We've had earthquakes in West Virginia, and the geologists, this isn't just me making it up or some TV pundit making these things up. Geologists have actually studied this and have shown correlation between the injection wells and the earthquakes. Now, mostly earthquakes are 2 to 3 on the Richter scale, so it's not a huge problem, but we've had some earthquakes that have gone as high as 5, 5.5. Which then can shake things and cause damage. And we found that the earthquakes that are as far away as Chile. There was an earthquake a couple years ago in Chile, a huge, giant earthquake that affected the plates, tectonic plates of the world. And this is unreal. The geologists have traced that a huge earthquake in Oklahoma was caused by the aftershocks of that earthquake in Chile because the ground had been so destabilized because of the injection wells.
Oh, of course. Right. When you do something in one place, it just might have an effect somewhere else, even that far away.
Absolutely. I mean, it surprised me because I had to read that article a couple times, and then some other geologists chimed in, and I thought, you know, I don't know a whole lot about geology, but I know that people with PhDs in geology who study these things probably know more than I do.
Right. Not right. I mean, you've studied this. You don't have to have a degree in a particular thing that you're studying, because when you study it, you look at all the information available, and then you draw some conclusions from it, and then your book is fabulous.
Thank you.
You talk about the public health issues. You talk about water pollution, air pollution, impact of diesel fuel, and when you think about the chemicals that they're putting in the earth, that is just mind-blowing.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest problems is that when you take a look at all the chemicals that go into the earth, we're putting things in there that don't belong there. And, in fact, I got a story to tell, so I hope your listeners bear with me for just a little bit. Out near where I live was a trailer court of 32 trailers. And these were people that are mostly aged, or had disabilities, but the trailer court was fairly well maintained and pretty nice and everything else. A water company, because you needed, 3 to 9 million gallons of water. I'll tell you what, we'll finish that right after the break.
All right, great. We'll be right back in 3 minutes.
Okay.
Today is Dr. Walter M. Brash. He is the author of Fracking in Pennsylvania, Flirting with Disaster. You can purchase it at his website or from Amazon. It does come as a Kindle as well as a regular book. His websites are walterbrash.com, and you spell Brash Brasch, and his other website is walterbrasch.blogspot.com. And you were telling us about the trailer park and what is going on and how the fracking has impacted the people there.
When I do writing, I do a lot of social issues writing, and this is a case of just what's happening throughout the industry. Because the industry needs water really bad, a large water company came into the area, bought the trailer park, and basically leveled it. Now, the reason they leveled the trailer park is because they needed to build a plant to get 3 million gallons of water from the Susquehanna River out to the drillers. Now, the people, remember, most of these are aged, or they're they have various disabilities. A number of them had really good jobs before they retired, but on fixed income it's hard to live. But anyhow, the water company said, we'll pay, for your inconvenience, we'll pay you $2,500 to move your trailer. Well, it takes about $11,000 to $12,000 to move a trailer. So a huge story about how these people could not handle that kind of investment. They were given about 30 days. I talked to most of the people in the trailer park and people around them, and there was that problem. Now, we're going to flash forward to the fact that one of the people that owned a trailer in the trailer park, and this is near Williamsport, which is where the Little League World Series is, and it's a huge drilling area right now. I mean, if they could drill in the middle of the Little League fields, I'm sure they would. But this woman, who is the manager of a dollar store, and the people would come in to get all kinds of things. These are people from other states who are here temporarily, and so they'd come in, get stuff for their for the company or for themselves. And she told me a story about how one day she was wondering why they were coming in and just cleaning her shelves of water, because they sell 24 pack cases of water at that store.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, and she said, "Well, you can't be using it for the drilling." They said, "No, we're using it for ourselves." And she said to him, and this is probably not a very good business practice, but she was honest. She said, "You're polluting our own water, our own streams with what you're doing, and you have the nerve to come in here and clear our shelves of fresh water." And I think
Indeed. That's
the whole issue here is that the industry had the money to buy out the owner of the trailer of the land. It was about 16 acres or so, and just get rid of these people were what I call collateral damage. It's sort of like, we need to get water. You guys don't have anything to fight with. You're low income anyhow, so who cares? And I found that some of our legislators, when some of the people went to their local legislators to try to get help, the legislators said, "Hey, basically that's what they said."
Wow. Oh, that is really terrible.
And if it could affect that trailer park, it could affect anybody.
Sure.
Because we have eminent domain. This is unreal. When you think of eminent domain, you think of the government coming in and saying, we need to build a new road. That's very important. And we'll pay you a fair price for your house, and we'll move you and that kind of thing. Private companies in the oil and gas industry also can use eminent domain, because they declared gas to be a commodity.
I see.
Mm-hmm. So the gas, I have a whole lot of cases that I found out about, and it's in the second edition, about people who did not want to sell out any part of their land to the oil companies, and they've come in and said, "We're seizing it anyhow," and they've been allowed to do that.
Oh my gosh. And of course they don't give them anywhere near the price, the market value.
No.
Yes.
And in fact, one woman, in Texas, she owned a fairly large ranch, a very nice, woman, and they came in And they basically, this is for the Canadian Keystone XL pipeline that they wanted to put over her land. Well, now, you can't just say, we're going to saw off a couple acres of your land and pay you X amount of dollars. You come in, you have to have access roads. It basically splits her land. It affects the river that's adjacent to her land. When you're seizing property, and the state of Texas allows that, you know, they basically said you can come in and do that. Here's what's the horrible part about it. The people that seized her land are Canadians. They're not Americans. You know, we're allowing foreign companies now to come in and use that eminent domain to seize land.
Oh my gosh, that's terrible.
Yes, it is. We apparently don't care.
They don't care.
They don't care. Government doesn't. In fact, in Pennsylvania, our governor, Tom Corbett, gave a $1.7 billion tax write-off to Royal Dutch Shell to build a plant on the western part of the state on the Allegheny River. Now, Royal Dutch Shell is not American-owned.
No.
It's foreign-owned. And we're giving them a $1.7 billion tax cut. Almost the same month that he announced that tax cut, and he tweeted about how important this is for jobs. I mean, he inflated the jobs so horribly that even the people at Shell said that's not true. You know, I mean, we're not going to have 10,000 new jobs, maybe 400 jobs.
Oh, but my gosh.
He cut the education budget. He cut social services budget.
Oh, gosh.
So we're handing out corporate welfare to foreign companies to come in and do things to our land because whatever reason.
Because the politicians are in the pockets of the corporations, and it doesn't matter whether you're talking the local governor, whether you're talking about anybody. The politicians, federal and state, are in the pockets of the corporations.
Yeah. You know, those who have the money certainly exercise their rights, and those of us who are middle class, we're stuck with whatever people do to us.
Yes. Oh, goodness. And this, these chemicals that they put in the ground, it affects the water table. And so the water is not drinkable. The wells are what? Are they going dry? They, certainly. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, here's what's happening. Now, it's hard to see right now because out back in my house is a lot of snow. And I'm hoping it's going to go away by like maybe July. But we have a huge drought throughout the Southwest and in California and in North Dakota and some other places. A huge drought. Now, I didn't create the drought. Man did not create a drought, but there is a drought. Now, here's where some of the drought is. In the Central Valley of California, the Monterey Valley is the most productive agricultural land in the entire country. Almost all the dates and grapes come from Central California, a whole lot of things.
Sure. San Joaquin Valley is also a big agricultural area.
Exactly.
A lot of grapes.
And they have a drought. North Dakota has a problem because there's something called durum wheat, which provides the base for a whole lot of things like pizza crust and all the breads.
Sure.
I mean, it's very important. Well, they're drilling into that land in North Dakota. Now, add the drought. Remember, every one of these gas companies needs to have a lot of water. So what we were finding for the last 2 years, that the oil and gas companies were outbidding the local farmers to get water. Yes.
Sure. And of course, if it's a corporation, they're going to win over the private farmers, even if it's, well, what about the factory farms? Are they not, because they're corporations too?
Oh, exactly. And They haven't been able to outbid the oil people, which is strange.
Indeed.
Yeah.
We need to pick this up on the other side of the break, so stay with us. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Dr. Walter M. Brash. He is the author of Fracking in Pennsylvania, Flirting with Disaster. His websites are walterbrash.com and walterbrash.blogspot.com. And buy his book. Now, somebody in the chat room said that he was surprised that the EPA would allow fracking. But when you consider that all of the ABC agencies that are associated with the government are all in favor of the corporations. They were designed, created in order to control, not to control, but to conceal and to protect the corporations. The AMA, the EPA, whatever you want to, you know, the CIA, all of them protect the corporations, right?
Yeah, and you know, what's interesting about this is I dug into the study. I started researching this maybe 4 years ago, so I'm kind of a newbie at it, except that I'm an old-timer now because, 10 years ago, hardly anybody knew about fracking. But as I started researching this, I found out that the oil and gas industries have been exempt by Congress of several major laws, including the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the Clean Streams Act, and several other various acts that would protect the people, but they're exempt from them. And it's what we call the Halliburton loophole.
Oh, Halliburton. That wonderful company, Halliburton.
Yes, one of our favorites of all times.
Yes.
The reality is, because of the exemptions, they've been pretty much on their own. Now, when we talk about EPA, 2004, the federal government and the EPA said you can no longer put diesel fuel into the ground. Because that's what they were using diesel fuel as one of their chemicals.
Anybody with half a brain would know that diesel fuel would not be good for the water table. Is that not the stupidest darn thing you ever heard of?
Well, I've heard of many, many stupid things, but that's pretty close to the stupidest. But in 2004, 2005, the EPA said, you can't do this anymore. And they said, okay, we won't do this anymore. But the EPA did not enforce it until just this past month. So in reality, they're having, even though they say, well, we're not using diesel fuel, the reality is there has been many cases that we've documented about diesel fuel going into the boreholes.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you can make any law that you want, but if you don't enforce it, what good is it?
Absolutely. And I have no idea why the EPA was not enforcing it. There's all kinds of problems. I can't get the EPA to talk to me about some things, you know, and they should be, you know, protecting the people and protecting our environment and our clean water. But I have a feeling that they may not be doing that.
Exactly. Well, there's so many organizations, as you say in your book, there's so many organizations that are against fracking, but we never hear anything about those organizations in the mainstream media. If the mainstream media wants to put a little bit of light on something, they will bring somebody on. But if they really want to conceal something, they really conceal it. And they would never bring anybody on to the network, any network, to talk about fracking unless they were in favor of fracking.
Yeah, I think this is it. In fact, I'll give you some examples. Is when this book came out, and I'm pretty well connected to an awful lot of newspaper and editors, radio and TV and newspapers. And I know them. We socialize here and there. So many said, well, we don't have any wells in our circulation area, so why you know, we wouldn't want to do this. And I'm thinking, well, you run every little story about Justin Bieber, you know, why aren't you running about fracking? And then I explained to them how it does impact them, even though they don't have any wells, and it's like, they don't want to listen. The networks.
Well, it's like the Chile earthquake impacted Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. It does impact everybody in the country, because you're talking about water, you're talking about the farmers in California not being able to get water because the gas and oil companies outbid them. It does affect everybody in the country because we all eat, we all drink water.
Exactly. And, you know, you tried to explain this, and for some reason, up until just recently, it was very hard to get mainstream media to really accept this. Here's another reason. In Pennsylvania, we have in Pittsburgh a station called KDKA. It's the oldest commercial station in the country. And it's huge. Its signal can be heard in like 23 states.
Mm-hmm.
The oil industry, Range Resources, has bought 1 hour a week after a newscast for a commercial. You know, basically it's a talk show. Like we're doing, except that they're very, very pro-industry. It costs them about $150,000 a year. Now, there's no way in the world that those of us who do not have that kind of resources can match them.
So for
an hour, basically they have their infomercial to spout out whatever they want, and it affects the news coverage, because if you're going to have an industry that's going to spend $150,000 a year just on advertising, and something happens in the area. This has happened over and over again. The first people they go to find out the truth, the facts, is the oil industry. My friends in the anti-fracking movement are very seldom called to give another opinion.
Indeed.
It's just bad journalism.
Of course it is. Very bad journalism. Deceitful. They are lying by omission.
Exactly. The sins of omission are just as bad as if they had made a factual error on the air.
Exactly.
And the newspapers, there's a couple newspapers that have covered the issue pretty well, and I know there's a reporter from North Carolina coming up into Pennsylvania in a week or so to see what's going on up here. And so there's some environmental journalists who are really into this. But if your management doesn't give you the resources and the time to be able to do the stories, then who's going to hear about it? We have so many newspapers that are downsized horribly that they don't have the staff anymore. The people are having to cover car crashes and courthouse drama, and they don't have time to worry about the environment, and so many papers have laid off environmental reporters as, I guess, useless.
Sure.
So, you know,
well, I know when they were building the NAFTA highway in Texas as part of the Transcontinental I'm not sure what they called it, but the NAFTA highway, they went in and purchased 40 of the top newspapers along that highway, where the highway was going to be, in order to conceal what was going on.
Absolutely. And this is part of the problem, is why I like independent radio, like what you're doing, is that it gives another voice. People have a chance to hear other viewpoints, other resources, and not always be yammered at by the networks.
Sure. Oh my goodness, this is just an awful situation, and I think it's probably, well, it probably impacts us more than just about any other, and I just, the health issues, and I'd like to talk about that when we come back from our break, our top of the hour break, because there are some very horrible health issues, and you mentioned it, the carcinogens that are used in these chemicals that is going into the groundwater. You have all kinds of cancers, and you probably have health birth defects that are just terrible, and certainly the people themselves know this. They know the cause, And don't some of the local people also work for the industry, or do they just bring in people from the outside?
There's some that work for the industry that they hire locally, so many of the truck drivers. But an awful lot in Pennsylvania, we're seeing far more Oklahoma and Texas license plates than Pennsylvania license plates at the work sites. So
right.
These people will come in, they'll stay a while, they'll leave, and make sure that we talk about departments. And I'm taking about a 7-minute break right now.
Exactly. We get 7 minutes. We'll be back at 6 minutes after the hour. So stay with us. This is so very, very important.
Are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. This is the second hour of Spingola Speaks. Our wonderful guest today is Dr. Walter M. Brash. That's B-R-A-S-C-H. His websites are walterbrash.com and walterbrash.blogspot.com. And just a quick question. Dr. Brash is the author of Fracking in Pennsylvania, Flirting with Disaster. It's available at the websites or through Amazon. Can the oil and gas companies frack on public land?
Absolutely they can do that. Because the public land is owned by, you would think, the public, but it's really owned by the people who we elect to the offices. Now, in Pennsylvania, for instance, there was a moratorium under our previous governor that there could be no fracking on public land. But under the current governor, he's planning to issue an executive order, and we all know about executive orders, that if they drill in land that's adjacent to a public land, the state forest, the state parks, they can go underneath the parks and the forests to extract the gas.
Oh, they slant drill.
Uh-huh. Exactly. And so they're saying that we'll get a whole lot of money because of this, and we're thinking, well, what about the entire ecology of the area? What's going to happen? Because even though they don't put a well on top of the land, they can get to that oil and still cause a lot of problems, especially with the defragmentation of our forests, because they need to have roads, because each well pad, and well pad can have several wells on it, but each well pad plus rig takes up a minimum of 8 acres plus access roads.
Wow.
And this is good. This is good. I'm sorry. I was about to interrupt you. Pittsburgh is going to allow fracking at the airport.
Oh my gosh.
Allegheny County is allowing fracking at the large Pittsburgh airport. Now, it won't be on the runways, but it's, you know, I'm thinking about the logic here. And again, you know, I'm not a genius or anything. But if you're drilling in land that's close to a runway, and you can destroy some of the rock below the earth,
what's going to happen to the planes?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking about.
Yes.
But apparently nobody can figure that out. I mean, they may have figured it out, but I certainly think there's going to be a problem at some point.
Just common sense.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, this is why you have long runways, because you have to have extra room for the safety of the planes to land. You know, if something goes wrong, well, what if, I don't know, you mentioned earlier a sinkhole, a pothole, You know, I mean, this is not good.
Well. Well, all right, let's talk about some of the health issues. So of course, if you're pumping all these chemicals into the ground, you're going to have polluted water, water that lights up if you happen to strike a match next to your faucet. What's this going to do for the people's health?
Not very much. It's not going to do at all. I've got a number of studies, far more studies in the last year on researchers, health researchers, who have shown the correlation between the fracking and the air pollution and health pollution. We're seeing neurotoxins that have come up that we're seeing, you know, for instance, Dr. Theo Colburn out of the Texas area has tracked skin damage, eye damage, ears, nose, throat problems directly to the toxins that have gone into the earth and have come up. We've seen neurological damage. We've seen things that are mystical. For instance, there was a cloud at some point, this was about a year ago in Texas, and the cloud, according to the drillers at the time, said, well, it's just steam, it's clean. Well, then why were people going to the hospital when they were perfectly healthy the day before that this clean steam was coming up? So we're seeing a lot of that. I mean, I've got so many cases of, you know, even if only half of them were caused by fracking, that's still far more than enough.
Exactly. Now, there's about 650 to 750 chemicals used in fracking operations that are known carcinogens. And this is according to a report filed with the U.S. House of Representatives in April of 2011. What happened to that? Did anything come of that, or did they just...
No, they just had another report. They filed it. It's up to 1,000 chemicals now, because the industry has become very industrious. They've got more chemicals, that they can use. And, you know, the interesting thing is that the industry, because they got a fantastic PR operation. I mean, I admire how their PR operation goes. They say over 99% of all the fluid that goes in the earth is just clear water. Well, that's true until you realize that with 9 million gallons of clear water, you've got maybe 100,000 gallons of the impurities going in, and they don't mention about anything that they bring up out of the ground that's even more impure.
Now, you're talking about the truck drivers. What are the truck drivers hauling?
They're hauling everything from water to go to a well, and generally every well requires maybe about 200 200 truck trips. Something I can't say very fast, truck trips,
yeah.
to the well a day in order to bring the water to the well.
Yikes.
And the truck drivers bring the chemicals. The truck drivers take away the waste water. And that's a very good question that you raised, because what happens is when you have that many trucks, and they're heavy trucks, on the roads, and the oil companies aren't certainly paying for new roads, so it's us, you and me, that are paying for the roads to be fixed with the heavy truck traffic.
Right.
And that becomes a huge problem. Also, trucks that are onto the well pads, if you got some of this radon that comes up, or they do have depleted uranium that they bring up out of the ground that hadn't been disturbed for centuries, and now it is disturbed.
Right.
On the wheels of the truck, they're driving from point A to point B, maybe 20 miles, maybe 500 miles. There's been cases of, let's just say, dirty trucks. You know, trucks do get dirty. Well,
sure.
What's in that dirt, right?
Sure.
A number of car washes, a whole lot of car washes in northeast Pennsylvania and other parts of the country have signs that say no trucks are allowed to be washed here, basically. It's that bad. In fact, I got a picture of that in the book showing one of the large car washes that would normally wash these trucks that say, no, we don't want your trucks here. And they do leak. I had a case just a year and a half ago where a Halliburton truck on Interstate 80, now that's the huge highway that goes New York to the Frisco area, and Pennsylvania is split by Interstate 80, it had a leak. It was about a quarter, maybe a quarter, size of a quarter, and when the drivers, and there were two drivers, noticed it, they pulled over to a one of these service stations that has the, you know, the fast food connection. You go in there and you get gas, and you also get, you know, all kinds of little things, you know, like drinks and so forth. All of a sudden, there started to be a large cloud of smoke. Now, the only reason why it didn't affect the people of the town is because of the wind going the wrong direction. It blew it away. But that entire building, the entire service station, remember, gas pumps are engulfed in a white cloud. The truck drivers were not wearing hazmat suits.
Oh, gosh. Oh, goodness. Okay, we will be back in 3 minutes after a word from our sponsors. Our guest today is Dr. Walter M. Brash. His website, sites are walterbrash.com and walterbrash.blogspot.com. He is the author of Fracking in Pennsylvania, Flirting with Disaster. It's just mind-boggling what they're doing. Would you like to take some phone calls?
Oh, I'd love to talk to some people.
All righty. If you'd like to call in, ask a question. Of course, the number is 800-313-9443. In your book, you talk about, the one fellow that was from Williamsport, Tom Bean, talking about, the constant problems that he was having. He's a former gas field worker from Williamsport. And he talks about headaches and his hands were always cracked, and he always had a sore throat, sneezing. And when you think of the most vulnerable people in society, you think, of course, of children, babies, and older folks. All these people suffer, and this is terrible. Let's take Fred in Michigan. And Fred, somebody, one of the other listeners would love to talk with you. So if you could email me, Deanna@spingola.com, and then I will, if you want me to pass your email on to him. Anyway, Fred, welcome.
Well, thank you for that, Deanna. Problem. I don't have a computer.
Oh, okay.
And I can leave my number with Craig.
It's a board op. Okay, yeah, just give the board op your phone number.
Okay, so there's this guy, Lindsay Williams, who has adamantly stated that in the oil, the Alaskan oil pipeline system, come on, there's a really great supply of methane that every day is returned into the ground with, I'm pretty sure he said 77 jet engines along some length of the pipeline. So methane, I've learned, methane natural gas can be used to convert the nuclear power plants from nuclear crud, nuclear based. So this, all this fracking, is a really abominable, offense against the American populace. So that's the first thing I wanted to bring up. And the second thing is on Bob Tuscan's program, he interviewed a couple from Indiana, that I believe their website is AwakenVideo, awakenvideo.org. Well, they reveal the fact that in certain areas of the country, stellar people who have come together have begun to organize common law grand juries. And those two, I think, could prove to be an invaluable asset in repelling the dastardly conduct of this petrochemical cabal. Because I think once sufficient numbers of people organize locally against, with the knowledge that, and here's the kicker, Deanna, like Clint always brings it up, that the corporation government functions by contract, and even in their own, what shall we say, corrupted constitution, it identifies contract, and in fact, valid contracts in the 14th Amendment, Section 4. Okay, and then this has been corroborated by Ralph in Alaska every Sunday night, where he's into proving that the Uniform Commercial Code, which is all about contracts that we enter into. Okay, that's the supreme law of the land. So if a contract is created without our informed consent authorization, which is the only way a contract is valid, there must be informed consent authorization. It's very simple. Full disclosure, in good faith, valuable consideration, and clean hands. So all of those principal tenets of a valid contract are violated. So really we do have the silver bullet remedies or recourse, but there again, the deliberate dumbing down of Charlotte Isherby has said is destroying American sovereignty.
Exactly.
So anyway, yeah, over there in Pennsylvania, and I think here in Michigan, they're talking about fracking. We have to organize that. In the county sheriff, the CSPOA organization, of course, is proving to be a tremendous asset. But we just have to go about the business in every county with these tools of freedom, let's call them.
Right.
Liberty and freedom. And so, as Patrick Henry said in March of 75 when he rode into Culpeper, Virginia, and he saw a guy being scourged to death, he ultimately learned it was because the guy refused to be licensed to preach only from the King James Bible.
Wow.
He was preaching from the Geneva Bible. And so, imagine that, being scourged to death for not taking a license.
Yikes.
So nowadays, they don't scourge people, they just steal all their assets, right?
Right.
And the other thing we have to look at, the one thing that I'll give Mark Levin credit for, that's probably the only one thing, he made, I think, a inadvertent statement when he was dismantling Obamacare, and he said, in response to the Supreme Court's injustice, that one need not be a licensed attorney to be a judge. I heard that like, whoa! This is like a bomb exploding, and he did not explain. Nobody called in to motivate him to expound it. But imagine that, and I'm.
Well, Robert Jackson, who was in charge of the Nuremberg trials, did not graduate from law school.
Okay, so, and you know what, Deanna, the folks that advertise all the time on Republic, escape harassment, those folks know all about this.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be something to really pursue sometime as a guest on your program, the couple out of Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
The harassment folks, because we really have to empower the audience to become, liberated with these tools of liberty and freedom. And sure. then we can finally take, we can take control of the government that's supposed to be ours.
Sure. So now, anyway, did you have a question or a comment about fracking that for Dr. Brash?
Okay. Indeed. So he mentioned there's, I thought he said 1,000 different chemicals, and 80%, mm-hmm. I think he said, are toxic, and mm-hmm. and that they were being dumped into injection wells, which I can easily imagine would cause tremors or earthquakes. So has he heard of anyone having success in repelling, terminating that practice anywhere?
Well, Fred, what's happened is because it's on private land, and there's been a whole lot of people who have protested at the injection wells, and usually they get arrested because the police say you're interfering with business.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
All righty, folks, gentlemen, we do have to go to a quick three-minute break. We will be back. Our guest today is Dr. Walter M. Brash. His websites are walterbrash.com, where you can purchase his book, Fracking in Pennsylvania, Flirting with Disaster. You may also obtain it via Amazon as a Kindle or as a regular book. His other website is walterbrash.blogspot.com. Dr. Brash, are you with us?
I'm back with you. Yes, I am.
Are you doing okay?
Yes, I am.
All right.
I like commercial breaks for a number of reasons that your business people may not like them, but I love commercial breaks.
That's okay. I do too. I use them for, yes, I like them. All righty. Let's take Jim in Georgia. Jim, welcome to the program.
Hello, Diana. This is Jim in Georgia, and Dr. Brash, I've got a question for you.
Okay.
Let's say I own 100 acres,
mm-hmm.
and I have $10 million worth of gold underneath my land, okay?
Mm-hmm.
With this fracking, do they have the right to go straight down on the land they are on and then go at a 90-degree angle and then take the gold underneath my land? And then my next question is, how deep does my ownership of my land go?
Okay, that's a very good question.
And then, okay,
mm-hmm.
These chemicals, I know I have a well too, okay? And I use it for gardening and that, but now I'm afraid to use it for gardening because our county commissioner okayed fracking in our county. So, but if you could answer that for me, I'd really appreciate that. And thank you so much, sir.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Most homeowners aren't aware that they may not own the mineral rights beneath their own land, because when they bought their houses, it could be that the mineral rights were kept by a previous owner, or if the fracking companies come in and they say, we want to lease, say, 30 acres of your land for mineral rights, and that's what they're called, mineral rights. That means, yeah, I've never heard of anybody going after, you know, gold or diamonds or any other valuable resource underneath the land, but you're basically giving up everything below the surface of the land to the oil and gas companies. So if they do find that pocket of gold, it's theirs. Now, I'm sure that there's going to be a whole lot of lawyers that are going to be lining up to try to deal with this situation, but it does exist. And this is also interesting, is that the number of lending agencies, banks, as well as the federal government, the Fannie Mae and the Freddie Mac, will not lend money if a house is near a fracking area, or if the homeowner does not have the mineral rights. They just say it's not worth a while because you can't resell it at the same kind of price that you should be able to sell it for. So it could be that, you know, you may be leasing those acres and getting some good money for it, losing your mineral rights, but you're still making X amount of dollars a month. But the value of the house has gone down immeasurably, so that it's quite frequently we've seen homeowners that what we call underwater, that they owe more than the house is worth.
Oh, my. All righty. Let's take Kent in West Virginia. Kent, welcome to the program.
Hi, Diana and Dr. Brash. Well, I'm here in the belly of the beast. I have two pipelines on either side of me, 600 or 700 feet away. And I family had some little bit of mineral rights over in Greene County, Pennsylvania. I know the doctor knows where that is.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a little bit of money out of that, which enables me to have a computer and be on the Internet. So that's one good thing out of it. And then here in West Virginia, the roads, you know, they bring in these big, horrible trucks, and the roads here literally were just old gravel roads with just a little layer of just like a paintwork of asphalt over it, you know. But one thing they did do, I will give them credit, is they did build a very, very substantial road with all kinds of equipment the state could never afford to do, because simply they had to have a good road. So they did leave a good road. But I was just talking about the water situation. I was musing to myself one time that, well, with all this abundance of gas, well, they'll just use up all the groundwater, and then they'll have all that gas. They can operate those energy-consuming desalination plants. But then, the desalination plants produce a lot of saline byproducts and waste and everything. I was telling some guy here that's a real one of these. He'd buy stock in poison if he could, you know. And these capitalist type. And I was telling him about. And he says, oh, yeah, they can use that salination for this or that. So the industrialists will come up with a solution. But here's the thing. You're talking about pumping in, putting these wells in urban areas. Now, here's something you might want to check into. There's a book called The Poisoning of an American High School by a lady named Joy Horowitz. Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't. I should be reading that, I would think.
Yeah, she's... Well, apparently, I'd seen this years ago. There's an oil derrick right next to the Beverly Hills High School. And, it's a pocket of cancers. It's a cancer pocket right there. And they're trying to Aaron Brockovich, I guess, and they're trying to bring a lawsuit. Of course, it's being hushed up because it's Beverly Hills. But The Poisoning of an American High School by Joy Horowitz.
Yeah, I'll check that one out.
And you trot down there and tell the people in Pittsburgh and say, well, why don't you read this? They won't do it, but you never know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I learned from my listeners a lot. And in this case, I didn't know about that book, and I think that could be a very valuable lesson.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, it'd be a good tool. So that's all I have.
Well, thank you so very much for your phone call.
Okay.
All righty. Let's take Sherry in Kansas. Sherry, welcome to the program.
Hi, Deanna. Hello, Dr. Brash. One thing that I've heard someone talk about that could very well happen.
What happened to Sherry? Okay, she's still there?
I think we lost Sherry.
Okay, The Poisoning of an American High School. It's in paperback, and it's also available on Kindle. And let's see what else it says about it. It was published in on June 24th of 2008. Do we have Sherry back?
I'm here.
Okay.
I can hear you all.
Okay. I just did a little advertisement for the book. Okay, go ahead.
Is that they could deplete the water aquifer so much that they would dry out the trees and cause a dust bowl. I've heard of that happening in areas where water goes to an urban area, and then where they're pumping the water from, the trees can no longer reach the water.
Yeah. Absolutely, you're right. Yes.
And we're already seeing around here, we're not under the, or we don't have the Ogallala under us. It's farther west from where I live. But, oh, I think my phone's cutting out. You know, we already see the cedar trees and the pine trees, a lot of die off already because of just not getting enough rain. But I'd be interested to see if, you know, I don't know where, you said they're getting it out of the river, but is there any indication that they're dropping the water table too?
Yes, absolutely. And you raised the point about the trees. Trees are very, very resourceful if we can give them, like, human attributes. Their roots will go and seek water, and the roots, that's why some trees have very, very deep roots. But we're seeing the fact that, as you said, that sometimes because of the low water table right now, the roots aren't able to get to the water. And when you, that can't happen, you know, you're going to get a tree that dies. And when you start to get a forest with a lot of dead trees, you got a huge ecological problem because trees do protect us against all kinds of horrible things, you know, like erosion. They protect us in so many ways, and this is kind of why I think the problem of the drought is magnified, but even more so, trees along the river where water is taken out, even though you got billions of gallons of water in a river, you're taking it out from all at once, basically, from a certain area. The trees along the shores are being affected, and it's just not good.
All right. That's all I had. Thanks, Diane.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Sherry. All righty, we are going to a quick three-minute break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Today is Dr. Walter M. Brash. He is the author of Fracking in Pennsylvania, Flirting with Disaster. His websites are walterbrash.com and walterbrash.blogspot.com. And we have a couple more callers. Let's take Carrie in Pennsylvania. Carrie.
Hi there, Dr. Brash and Deanna.
I
want to thank you for covering the topic of slick water hydrofracking. This is such an important topic, and it needs to be focused on a lot more. And I would like to ask Dr. Brash, what's being done, like in the northern tier in central Pennsylvania, with the slick water hydrofracking? Has it slowed down? Is it ongoing? What's the status at this point?
Okay, it's a very good question. When the drillers came into the state and when the politicians basically rolled over and played dead, the industry said it's going to bring all these jobs, which we found out was not accurate, and it's going to give us gas for 100 years. Well, I'll tell you what, the fracking is giving me a lot of gas. But in the meantime, what we're finding is the reality that the industry being... They're not stupid. They're bright. They're going to go where the gas is. They have over-drilled, caused a glut of gas. They've taken out a lot of gas from the top part of the state, and they're starting to move around where the gas is. So you're starting to see areas that thought they were going to have all this prosperity for years and years and years with all people coming in, and it never materialized, really. I mean, some places have had some experience, but we've seen rents go up 3 or 4 times, so people can't even afford to live there anymore. And then the industry takes what they can, and they move out to other areas. Right now, one of the hot areas in the state is by the Little League World Series areas. So, yeah, there's still gas up in the northern tier, and the southern tier of New York, which abuts Pennsylvania, New York has a current moratorium on it until they determine what the health impact is, which is a very brilliant idea. It's like, let's find out for sure what's happening before we drill. But there's a lot of gas in the southern tier, and there's a lot of pressure to open up that land.
Have you had any comments from the gas companies about your book, about your topic, about your information that you've been putting out there?
Not as much from the gas companies, but from the governor's energy czar has written a couple really nasty letters to the editor.
Was that Patrick Henderson?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He thinks that I should be shut down, that I'm not a really good human being, and that I don't understand all the issues. So I figure I did a good job then.
I would think so, and I think people need to remember, as Dr. Engrafius said, Pennsylvania is an experiment that everyone's looking at Pennsylvania to see what happens in Pennsylvania with the slick water hydrofracking so that then they can go and develop it or not develop it in their own states.
I'm getting tired of being an experiment, I guess. And that's, one of our big problems really is the fact that the industry itself even says we really don't know what this can do. You know, we're just getting money right now. We're drilling. We're having some problems. We're fixing problems. In Pennsylvania, they're experimenting on the state of about 10 million people.
And the other evening on PCN, which is a public access television, there were several newspaper individuals, and they're now talking about slick water hydrofracking, but they say a lot of it's moving to North Dakota because that's where the jobs are. They were really promoting, if you want a job, come to North Dakota. And Hannity, too, was promoting that.
Yeah, North Dakota has the oil, and they're finding it's cheaper to get to the oil right now using the fracking than it is to get to the gas in Pennsylvania. So the highest, this just came out last week, the highest average rent in the nation, highest average rent in the nation is not New York City or L.A. It's up in the northwest part of North Dakota.
Interesting. Well, thank you so much for your book and your material. You need to get it back to central Pennsylvania so people can become a little bit more educated and aware of what's going on and perhaps help put this to sleep.
Well, I try to get around the state, so if you know any organizations that want me, I can be available. I'm usually bought with a dinner.
Well, that's a good to know. Hopefully some people in New York and different places will take advantage of that and use your expertise to give them the information they need to stop it before it starts, because that's where it has to go.
Yeah, in fact, I've got a quote here from a friend of mine, Helen Bugini Bataxa. She's a pediatrician in the southwest part of the state. She says, she opposes fracking. She says she doesn't want her patients, and I'm quoting her here, to be guinea pigs who provide the next generation the statistical proof of health problems, as in what happened with those exposed to asbestos or to cigarette smoke. So she's fought against it on a health perspective, and an awful lot of doctors and health people have opposed the fracking.
And is it true there is a gag order for doctors?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you asked that, because that's where I got started on this several years ago. In the proposed law, which now became law, there is a gag order that the industry does not have to reveal the contents of what goes into the ground. They call it trade secrets. If they can say it's a trade secret, they don't have to reveal it, which means that if I'm a patient and I have a rash and my physician has a suspicion that maybe because I live 500 feet from a rig, that maybe there's a correlation there. The physician goes to the gas company and says, I want to know, and they say, no, you can't know. Then they say, well, maybe if you sign a non-disclosure statement. So the non-disclosure statement says that the physician can't even tell the patient that there's a correlation or a suspected correlation. And if the physician has to pass the patient along to a neurologist or an oncologist, it starts all over again because that physician isn't allowed to tell another physician what the problem is. So we call that the gag order.
So Pennsylvania's making out big time with big money, but doesn't pay for your health.
No, it doesn't. And some people who I've talked to a number of farmers who have leased their land, and we're talking a bad economy, and it's easy to say, man, my barns are bad, I need to do this, I need to do that, I can't afford it, and so they'll get the lease their land, so many farmers have said now, if they knew now what they, you know, if they knew then what they now know about fracking, they would not have leased any of their land.
Okay, well, I will let someone else ask some questions, and thank you so much.
And thank you very much.
Bye now.
Thank you, Carrie. Bye-bye. All right, real quick, Chris in Las Vegas. We've got about 1 minute, a little over a minute.
Well, good morning, Walter and Deanna.
Good morning. Or afternoon, or wherever you are.
You know, earlier you mentioned Halliburton, but you forgot to give credit where credit's due, I think, and that's the Bush-Cheney cabal, who also pumped Core Exit into the Gulf of Mexico, bought Boots and Coots, and they've had no problem with destroying the aquaculture anywhere on the planet, so why should it be surprising they use the schemes of secrecy to disguise destroying the water aquifers around the world?
Yeah, you're right. Dick Cheney, when he became vice president, one of the first things he did is convene a environmental committee type to discuss these issues, and almost entirely it was made up of the corporations. And that's how we got the Halliburton loophole. And yeah, and I guess it would make no difference whether Dick Cheney was a great vice president or a mediocre vice president. The fact is, most of the laws have been exempted for the industry, so that's, I would think, a pretty dark mark against him.
I'd just call him a terrorist and leave it at that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Chris.
Thank you so much, Deanna and Walter, for bringing this truth of the shame of fracking to America.
And thank you for listening.
Thank you, Chris.
Be blessed.
All righty. We do have one more caller from Pittsburgh. If he has a real quick we're just 3 seconds. So we don't have time for Gary in Pittsburgh. I know he probably had a really good question or comment. Thank you so very much, Doctor, for being on the program. We need to do this again because it is so essential that people know about this. And I hope that a lot of people will buy your book and educate themselves.
Oh, thank you, Deanna. I really appreciate this.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, listeners. Have a great weekend. Talk with you on Monday.